Our Bible reading today is Luke chapter 5, verses 1 to 11. Not Matthew, as it says in your sheet, but Luke chapter 5, verses 1 to 11. That's page 1032 in your church Bibles, or page 1597 in the large print. One day, as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, with the people crowding round him and listening to the word of God, he saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on you will catch men." So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Good morning, everyone. So I'm not officially, I haven't passed a training course to do this, and I'm not official, just want to clarify that up front. That actually apparently means this isn't a sermon. This is either a talk or a meditation. You can decide which. I'm going to work on the basis that it's a talk. If anybody looks asleep, I'm going to assume you've decided you're meditating, and that's going to be fine, and we'll just agree to differ on that one. I had the interesting experience this week of being interviewed by the Financial Times, which hasn't happened to me before, but I work in, part of my job, I do a lot of work developing leaders, coaching leaders, and they're doing a piece on leadership, and they wanted to get some quotes and thoughts on things that may be in some article some point in the future. And at one point during that, I was asked a question. I've been asked a number of times before, which is how do you define leadership, Steve? And so it's something I've given some thought to. And, you know, and a lot of people, I think, define leadership as a role. You know, it's a job you've got. If you're a chief executive, then you're a leader. If you're a vicar, then you're a leader. If you're a manager, then you're presumably leading some kind of people. So some define it as a role. I think others define it as a set of qualities. There's over 2,000 different articles and studies on the qualities of a leader. You know, and largely it's all the same sort of groups of things. You know, you define a leader by it's someone that's got a great vision, someone that can communicate really well, someone that can motivate. So do you define leadership as a role? Do you define it as a set of qualities? I actually define it in a different way to that. And this is what I said to the reporter when I spoke to him. I think a leadership is defined simply by the existence of followers. You're not a leader if nobody's following, is the point of my argument. You know, you can call yourself an expedition leader, but if you turn around and there's actually nobody behind you, you're not. You're just somebody going for a walk. So the followers define the leader. There is no leadership if there is no followership. And so, you know, that's what I want to talk a bit about this morning, is this idea of followership. Maybe you can move us on to the goldfish slide, Simon. And so I use that term importantly. We talked about fellowship. Let's talk about followership. Because I think we like to talk about leadership. There's a sort of coolness to leadership, and we have all sorts of training courses that people will have been on in different careers and jobs about how to be a leader. But how do you be a good follower? Because I think there are skills, as well as there's leadership skills, I think there's followership skills. And as well as being good leaders, you know, we need to think about being good followers too. So what we're going to do this morning, really simply, is in a second I want to kick off by showing you a short video. It's about 3 minutes long, and it's, you know, apologies for the quality of the footage, but it was just somebody that caught a moment on their phone camera that is a fascinating example of leadership and followership in action. I want to start with that. Then we're going to turn to the passage in Luke that we just read, look at some characteristics of followers that we see in the passage there. And we're going to finish with another video, which I think is a real example of somebody following God's call in their life. So, Simon, if we can play the first video.
If you've learned a lot about leadership and making a movement, then let's watch a movement happen, start to finish, in under 3 minutes and dissect some lessons. First, of course, a leader needs the guts to stand alone and look ridiculous. But what he's doing is so simple, it's almost instructional. This is key. You must be easy to follow. Now here comes the first follower with a crucial role. He publicly shows everyone else how to follow. Notice how the leader embraces him as an equal. So it's not about the leader anymore. It's about them, plural. Notice how he's calling to his friends to join in. See, it takes guts to be a first follower. You stand out and you brave ridicule yourself. Being a first follower is an underappreciated form of leadership. The first follower transforms a lone nut into a leader. If the leader is the flint, the first follower is the spark that really makes the fire. Now here's the second follower. This is a turning point. It's proof the first has done well. Now it's not a lone nut and it's not two nuts. Three is a crowd and a crowd is news. A movement must be public. Make sure outsiders see more than just the leader. Everyone needs to see the followers, because new followers emulate followers, not the leader. Now here come two more people, then three more immediately. Now we've got momentum. This is the tipping point, and now we have a movement. As more people jump in, it's no longer risky. If they were on the fence before, there's no reason not to join in now. They won't stand out, they won't be ridiculed, and they will be part of the in crowd if they hurry. And over the next minute, you'll see the rest who prefer to stay part of the crowd, because eventually they'd be ridiculed for not joining. And ladies and gentlemen, that is how a movement is made. So let's recap what we've learned. If you are a version of the shirtless dancing guy, all alone, remember the importance of nurturing your first few followers as equals, making everything clearly about the movement, not you. Be public, be easy to follow. But the biggest lesson here, did you catch it? Leadership is over-glorified. Yes, it started with the shirtless guy, and he'll get all the credit, but you saw what really happened. It was the first follower that transformed a lone nut into a leader. There's no movement without the first follower. See, we're told that we all need to be leaders, but that would be really ineffective. The best way to make a movement, if you really care, is to courageously follow and show others how to follow. When you find a lone nut doing something great, have the guts to be the first person to stand up and join in.
Okay. So if you find a lone nut doing something great, join in. And there's plenty of lone nuts in this church, so you're in a good place to do that. There's an awful lot of, you know, wisdom hidden in there. The point about, you know, followers follow other followers, not always the leader, is an interesting point to think about. I'm going to think about that as we go through the morning. And also at the end of looking through the passage, I want to ask the question, does Jesus lead this church? And we'll come back to that. So keep that in your minds as we talk it through. But let's look at, the example of Jesus calling his first followers. Because if he came to lead us, then his first job was to create followers. Otherwise, there is no leadership. And this passage in Luke tells us a little bit about that time. So I'm going to break it down and look at some of the features of... There's five characteristics of these people that Jesus called. And I'm going to put them and talk these through with you now. Now, if we look at verses 2 and 3 in that passage, I'm going to read those out again. Jesus saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. Then he sat down and taught people from the boat. Just think about that actually happening for a minute. So Simon's, we know from later on in the passage, he's been fishing all night. He's parked up his boat, he's cleaning his nets. Then this guy comes who we presume he doesn't know at that time. Maybe he's been listening in to the talk. But he is open enough that he's willing to go take this guy onto his boat, push him out to shore. It would have involved Simon staying in the boat, so he's had to give up what he's doing to help this guy he's never met carry on teaching the crowd. That first characteristic I think we see of Simon and the others is one of openness to experience. You know, if you think about these rugged fishermen and this guy coming along saying, can I borrow your boat? You know, imagine going to some builders down the road and saying, can I just climb on your scaffolding for a minute and talk to this group of people? I expect the answer you might get, you know, is probably words I can't use up at the front of church. That's why you do courses, to make sure you don't use those sorts of words. But, you know, I'm thinking, but, you know, these are rough and ready fishermen, you know. They're probably going to say, what, you're going to get in our boat? No, thanks. We're tired, we're busy all night. You can go and find your own boat. But they didn't. They were open. They were listening. Openness is important, I think, for us as followers, because openness leads to learning. And a good follower is someone that's going to learn from the leader. I was interviewing people for jobs a few months back, and there was one person's CV looked really good. We read it through, and it seemed like she had about 8 years' experience of training. We decided to call her in for an interview. I sat and talked to her, and I came out of the interview, and I could tell it wasn't right, and one of my colleagues said, how was she? And I said, no, not right. He said, well, she looked like she had 8 years of experience. And I said, no, she didn't have 8 years of experience. She had 1 year of experience. She'd repeated it 8 times. And that was my view. I got the sense from this person they'd done the same thing for 8 years. It hadn't changed. She hadn't developed it. She hadn't moved on. And I just thought, that's not 8 years of experience. Okay, 8 years of time has elapsed. But I've got no sense of openness, got no sense of development. Followers are people that are open to things, that are accepting, that will try things out and create change. And I think we see this in Simon Peter, just in the simple act of him being willing to say, sure, come and preach from my boat. The second characteristic that I think we see as we read on into verse 4 and 5 is, you know, is almost an extension of that, and is there obedience. So when Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets. I love the detail there, that he wanted to get in the fact that they were tired. Look, we've worked all night. It's a very kind of human thing to do, isn't it? Fine, I'm going to do what you've said, but I want you to know the sacrifice I'm making and putting in here. You know, I like that. You know, did he do it with the best of will when he wanted to have his little say? Yet despite his resistance, he did it. If you just think about the setting again in detail, they'd been fishing all night, and they were sat cleaning their nets. I gather that's quite a long and complicated process. These would have been big nets, and they can't use their nets again the following day until they're clean. Now, by going out fishing again, they're going to get their nets dirty again, seaweed and all sorts of things trapped in it, and they're going to have to start the cleaning again. So if this is a pointless exercise, they're already shattered from being up all night, so they're making quite a sacrifice. And it takes quite a lot of obedience. But obedience is the heart of following. Because leadership, I've always thought that people aren't very good at doing what they're told, but they are quite good at copying. And that's where obedience comes in. Jesus is looking for people that will copy him, copy what I do. Was this a test of their obedience as well as a sign of his power? Quite possibly. and he's looking for people that will be obedient and follow his lead. That copying characteristic is a really important one. When I'm coaching leaders, I will often get people coming to me with complaints about their team. Why do my team do this? My team have gotten all bossy and arrogant. And I'll say, did they start that way? You know, were they bossy and arrogant when you hired them? Oh, no. So how have they learned to be bossy and arrogant? What's the potential of who they've learned that from? Because quite often what you see in people that you don't like is the behaviour in you that they're copying. And that's kind of a hard truth. So Jesus is looking for obedient people that will copy his example. The third thing we see, I think, in the disciples at this point as followers is their generosity. So that's the next two verses, 6 and 7. So when they'd let down the nets, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. So when those first two have a good experience and something given to them from God, the first thing they do is share it. The first thing they do is call over to their friends and say, hey, come on, let's get some of this. Okay, they didn't try to cram it all in the boat. They didn't say, right, let's go back, dump this load, and let's go back and get another. They shared it out. Generosity. Important characteristic of a follower, because followers will follow other followers. And Jesus is looking for people that were generous and would share. Sometimes I think we're in danger of overcomplicating things like evangelism. You know, I'm someone, probably like a lot of you, that find the word challenging. I get nervous when I'm thinking about things like, let's go and hand out leaflets in front of Sainsbury's, and somehow I've gotten involved in that, and I'm terrified by the prospect of it. But at the heart of evangelism is generosity. It is, if something good has been given to you, do you want to share it with others? That's what Jesus was looking for in his followers. You know, I'll give you a great load of fish. What are you going to do with it? We want to share it with others. If we get our minds right that, you know, is our job to evangelize? Yes, but let's think about it more in terms of generosity. Let's share the good things we've given with others. That will be our evangelism. You know, if he's helped your life, if he's saved you, he's brought you peace, tell others about that. It can be sharing our skills and abilities as well. I know with this Sunday was going to be an activity Sunday, I think, in one of the sort of original plans. And, you know, I'll confess to you that I think when we decided, let's not do activity Sunday, let's have a normal service, I almost breathed a sigh of relief, thinking, good, because activity Sunday is really tough. I found it really hard. I think others do too. For me, it's easier to stand here and talk to a group of people than it would be going out there doing the stuff in the community. I think what we need to think about with Activity Sunday is get back to the heart of generosity. What is it we're good at, and how can we share that with others? If you're great at baking cakes, then for Activity Sunday, let's bake a load of cakes and let's go and take them around people's houses and say, do you want some cake? We've made more cake than we need. We'd like some cake. You know, if you're good at gardening, let's go and do some gardening. You know, let's just generously share the things that God has done for us with others. That's part of following him. The fourth thing that we then see from the disciples, I think, is humility. Verses 8 to 10. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man. For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. So Simon fell on his knees. Humility. I think humility is an important leadership characteristic as well as being vital for a follower as well. You know, our goal is to make Jesus great, not to be great ourselves or not to appear great. In a church that Becky and I used to go to, I remember an incident one Sunday morning where a friend of ours, to hide his own embarrassment, let's call him Chris, even though his real name is Craig Holmes. So Chris was going to be leading worship that morning, and Chris was a young and good looking, basically, and all the women in the church fancied Chris, just to be really simple, including my now wife. So she doesn't say that, but I know it's true. And anyway, I'll just call him Craig. I've given his name now. Craig. I didn't want you to think it was our Craig. Craig turns up, and he's in his tight leather trousers for Sunday morning. And we had a gruff northern vicar, not the one you know. It's a different gruff northern vicar, who immediately said, "Craig, leather trousers for worship. I'm not sure that's entirely appropriate." But anyway, there's Craig in his leather trousers. Good-looking guy, gets up to lead worship. And at the time, one of the songs that was popular had the lyrics, "It's all about you, Jesus, it's not about me." "It's all about you, it's not about me." And, of course, the inevitable happened. Craig stood there with his guitar and leather trousers and sang, "It's all about me, it's not about you." And we were just sat there going, "No, dear." What a moment. And, you know, poor old Craig, he wasn't actually a person with an ego, but it just looked awful. We never sang that song again, thankfully. But humility is important. It's important for leaders, it's important for followers. Humility is about, you know, doing something to make somebody else great, not to make you great. And it's important to understand what it is, because don't get humility confused with timidity. Because the final thing we see from the disciples here, those early followers, is courage. Let me just read the last verse and then link these two points together for you. Because the last verse in our passage, verse 11, was... I'll read the second half of 10 and 11. "Then Jesus said to Simon, 'Don't be afraid. From now on you will catch men.' So they pulled their boats upon shore, left everything, and followed him." They left everything. I seem to remember this verse saying they left their nets. I don't know why I thought that. And I checked other Bible versions to see if it was there. But most of the translations say they left everything, or they left all. They left it all behind. That's a lot of courage. I'd love to know the detail of that. I mean, Luke's pretty sparse on what he actually says about how that worked. Did they go immediately? Did he just say, "Right, we're off," and just dressed in the clothes they were in, presumably filthy after fishing? Did they just head off? Did they get a kind of a week at home to sort out their affairs and then go? Or, you know, or were they kind of still based in the town and they were sort of following him but still basically living at home? It's a bit unclear. But, you know, we do think Peter was at least married, so we think he's left a wife behind. Some of them had probably left kids behind as well. They certainly left their work behind and their job and their source of income. It's quite a big sacrifice that they took. So, humility is not timidity. Humility is putting somebody else first, but following is having the courage to really step out and do something different, and leaving something behind. Often when you're following, you're not just adding something else to what you do. There could be things to leave behind, and something to think about this morning, if you're following Jesus, is, what do I need to leave behind? What am I prepared to leave behind if I'm following? So that's at least what I see in this passage in terms of characteristics of followers. Good followers are people who are open to learning and still listening. They're obedient and they'll copy the leader, Jesus has set us an example. I know we focus often on his teaching and what he says, but we should look at the example of his life. The things he did as an example to follow. He said, follow me, not just listen to me and do what I've said. He said, follow. It's copying, it's imitation. Good followers are generous. What the good things we have done, we should be sharing with others, whatever they may be. We need to be humble and we need to be courageous. I'd like to show another clip now, if we can get the other memory stick working, Simon. And this is something a couple of people I know have seen, because this is a short video that was played at the Global Leadership Conference that a number of us went to a few weeks ago. And I was quite inspired by this, because this is a story of two guys who felt God was telling them to do something, and they decided to follow. And this is just a story of what happened to them. It's about 3 or 4 minutes long, and then I'm going to close when we've watched it. It is coming, don't we? Are we okay? Is it the sound? Yes, please.
I'm so amazed at how far God has brought me on this journey. There have been times when I couldn't see beyond just 1 foot ahead of me. And looking back, I recognize that God doesn't need me to carry out his purposes on this planet, but he has invited us into this story. It started 10 years ago at the summit, 2006. I heard Bill and Bono challenging the church to understand the urgency behind HIV and AIDS. Bono at the time said that only 6% of the church felt that it was incumbent upon them to do anything about HIV and AIDS. And he said, God will not let the church walk away from the AIDS emergency because it's difficult, because it's costly, or because it's a moral hazard. I was sitting there at that event with a friend of mine, Zach. We were both 18. We were so just young and passionate about trying to change the world. And how could the American church be involved in helping address this issue? So we left Chicago with a 2-day drive ahead of us back to Atlanta. As we drove, God revealed to us that he wanted us to make a documentary, which was unusual because we weren't filmmakers. But we said yes, and we took that step. 9 months later, from the summit to May of 2007, we were on a plane going to Kenya for the first time. It turns out that the documentary did not accomplish what we hoped it would accomplish. It was not a success. But it was while we were there in Kenya that God showed us what that next step was. He introduced us to two men named Cornell and Duncan that would change our path and set us on a whole new course. Cornell and Duncan had met about 5 years earlier. They discovered that their stories were very similar. The way that they had experienced HIV, the way that it had affected their lives and their families, and the way that God was moving them to care for people that were affected. Cornell and Duncan had put all of these ideas into a plan. And that plan was to mobilize the Kenyan church to care for parents living with HIV as a means to prevent hundreds and thousands of children from becoming orphans. And this idea of orphan prevention just captured my heart and my imagination. We realized that our part wasn't to go to Kenya and start something. It was to leverage these local leaders that were already on the ground and already had an incredible vision. We chose this local church to start in January 2008, and that was the place of our first Care for AIDS Center. We now employ over 80 Kenyan staff full-time. We've seen over 6,000 families complete the program, and they represent over 20,000 children. It's now been a 10-year journey. It was that first step that has allowed me to experience this incredible story of Care for AIDS, but also experience God on a whole new level that I'm afraid I would have missed if I hadn't taken that first step.
Thanks. What inspires me about their story is how, firstly, something small can turn into something so big. Secondly, their courage for doing something they didn't really know how to do. Let's make a video. We don't know how to make a video. Okay, but let's make a video. I love their courage as a follower. And I love how actually their vision was not one of leadership. They didn't go and start something. They found two lone nuts when they went out to Kenya, and they said, these guys are doing a great thing. Let's follow them. And that became... And that's really the heart of what I hope the message is this morning, that let's not always think about what we're going to lead, but let's think about where we follow, following Jesus and following the things that his followers have already started. I said I'd come back to the question of, does Jesus lead this church? Because I think the answer isn't necessarily a yes. I think the answer is, he only leads this church if we're following. There's no followers, there's no leader. So, let's not overcomplicate our Christianity. We can get wrapped up in theology, we can get wrapped up in church politics. Those things sometimes are needed, but they can sometimes distract us from the simple truth that we're here to follow him. He's seeking followers, he set us an example, and are we going to follow that example or not? So this week, you know, I leave you with the thought about what risk are you prepared to take? And it can just be a small first step, like those guys. Just start something off and see where it goes. And we have the words of the final verse of today's passage where Jesus said, don't be afraid. One of the most ambiguous in my mind quotes from Jesus in the Bible. Was he saying, I've just done a miracle, don't be afraid of me? Or was he saying, looking ahead and what I'm going to call you to, don't be afraid of that? I think he meant both. So as you look ahead, don't be afraid and take a step. Thanks.